Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, friends, it's me again. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. If you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in and give me a thumb. Say hi while you're at it. Helps me a ton with that damn algorithm. And besides, it's always nice to see you there. All right then, let's hop on that crazy train.
All aboard!
Oh shit. Merry Christmas there, friend. Yeah, I know I'm almost a week early with that, but as usual, Peabody scores the holiday and Drew gets the leftovers. True, I shouldn't complain. He's probably over there complaining he gets no days off. Time and a half? Shit, how about a company car, too? Anyway, come on in, friend. You too, Chester. So check out SimplyScaryPodcast.com, would you? For as little as $7.99 a month, you get the entire catalog ad-free and available to download or stream. There's a little patron button on top there. Can't miss it. And if you're so full of holiday spirit you just can't stand it anymore, you can visit Patreon.com/DrewBlood and spread some holiday cheer there, too. So tonight we welcome back our good friend and illustrious author P.D. Williams. You know, we learned from those 90 Monster Ballet commercials that every bad boy has a soft side. Thanks to P.D. Williams, we know that the occasional horror author also has a funny side. The sides you get to see all depends on what he's been drinking. This one's NyQuil and Hot Toddies. So without further delay, from author P.D. Williams, I give you the seasonally appropriate Craig's Christmas. Pauline Peck, Lorna's aunt on her mama's side, wasn't happy about being chosen to host a yearly Christmas party. In her waning years, she not only preferred solitude, she required it. The only living thing she wanted to share her dumpy, lime-green mini tenement with were two feral cats and a possum named Snotrag. Day after wonderfully predictable day, she sat in her patchwork lounger that was dotted with cigarette burns and macaroni and cheese stains. She bided her time by chain-smoking and watching countless reruns of Law & Order. Smoking had always been her favorite activity outside of nude parasailing and off-road unicycling. To keep her filthy habit within her meager budget, she kept an inventory of Pall Mall cigarette butts as surplus. Besides brief moments of smooth pleasure, the tobacco hors d'oeuvres doubled as matches. Once the butts neared the end of their lives, Pauline drew on what was left, then used their corpses to bring fresh cigarettes to life. It was a useful lesson she had learned while attending the DeVry School of Cheap Smokes, where she majored in emphysema.
Who the heck could that be?
Growling in agitation, she lifted herself out of her chair and stomped to the front door, flinging it open.
State your business.
I'm here about the furnace,
the HVAC tech said to the angry elderly woman.
Well, praise the Lord and pass the nachos. I forgot all about you coming today. Well, I got a family dropping by in a few weeks for our annual Christmas shindig. I wouldn't want them to freeze. Well, at least the ones I can stand. The others can keep toasty by going to hell.
Melvin, as his embroidered name tag indicated, was busy during this time of year. He didn't have time for chatty customers.
One sympathizes with your plight, ma'am, but I'm here to fix the furnace. Shit,
he muttered with conspicuous agitation.
Follow me,
Pauline said, waving him inside. She led him to her small kitchen and pointed at a door that led to her basement.
You want me to take you to the furnace?
No, ma'am. I shall find it easily enough. Would you like me to talk to you about the repair when I'm finished?
Nope. I'm ready for my afternoon nap. The one I took late this morning wore me out. Which reminds me, I need this house to be so quiet you can hear a church mouse getting a hard on. Just leave the bill on the kitchen table and sneak on out of here. Savvy?
Yes, ma'am. I'll try to keep it down so I don't wake you.
I'm glad you're on board with the idea. Otherwise, I'd drop to my knees and beg you to reconsider,
Pauline said contemptuously. Melvin let his host's snarkiness pass.
I'll get to it then. Shit,
he said before descending to the basement. Reaching the bottom of the steps, he plodded through the darkness until he walked into a dry-rotted string attached to an overhead light bulb. At first, he thought it was a strand of web and cringed.
Shit.
Realizing his mistake, he pulled the string, illuminating the dim space. Like most basements, this one was dirty and stank of mildew and old cardboard boxes. He spotted the ancient furnace stashed away in a far corner. Melvin went over, set his toolbox down, removed the head strap with an attached light, and got to work. By the time he figured out the problem, a couple of loose gears, Pauline's loud snoring was rumbling through the upstairs, rattling the floor joists. As he had promised, Melvin set about his work, taking care not to disturb her. When he finished, he wiped his oily hands on a towel and returned his tools to their box.
That's three down, and 100 more to go. Shit,
he groused. Suddenly, the floor began quaking, followed by the sound of cracking concrete.
What in the name of...
Though curious, Melvin's instincts yelled at him not to turn around. It was a useless warning, considering he had only one way to leave. Still, he hesitated. Only when he felt the air behind him become superheated did he stand and turn. His eyes couldn't accept what he was seeing. It wasn't only the flames rising from the narrow chasm in the floor that were terrifying to Tech. It was the hellish creature with tight, mottled skin, long horns, and four yellow eyes that was climbing from it. Leaving the opening, the creature stepped towards him, its cloven hooves clacking on the hard floor. Its presence left a foul scent of hot sulfur and rot that filled the room like a noxious fog. When the vile creature reached him, Melvin knew it was too late to run. He had only enough air in his lungs to emit a quiet squeak of terror as the demon grabbed him by his ankles and dragged him toward the fiery pit. With ease of effort, it flung Melvin in, then jumped in after him. Together, they dropped into the endless depths of hell, the portal closing behind them like a scar being magically healed. Soon after, the room returned to a musky space crammed with warped furniture, unused workout equipment, and Christmas decorations. Later, Pauline woke from her nap and went to the basement to see if Melvin had fixed the furnace. Confusion filled her mind as she tried to make sense of the toolbox sitting alone in the corner and the scratch marks along the floor.
And where that is he get to?
She asked herself.
As far as I'm concerned, after leaving this mess in my basement, he can go straight to hell.
On an unseasonably warm Saturday afternoon in late November, dozens of potential customers ambled onto the lot of Chucklehead Charlie's used cars. They were lured there not so much to inspect the inventory as they were to see a promotional event featuring a wrestling match between two violent little people. The owner, Chucklehead Charlie himself, stood atop the hood of an ancient Kia Soul, a bullhorn gripped in his clammy hand.
Come one, come all to our special event. We have with us today, all the way from Skillet, Alabama, the regional midget wrestling champ, Thumbtack. He'll be joined in battle by the horrifying hobby warrior, Little Buck. Before they commence the grappling, stroll around the lot and check out our wonderful inventory of previously owned vehicles. In the far corner, we have a few of our sales specials. The first one's a low-mileage pink Mini Cooper that was only driven by its gay owner to twice-weekly quilting class. Parked next to it is a slightly damaged Ford F-123. It used to be an F-150 until it got sandwiched between a semi-truck and a moving van. The last one's a real-deal steal. A fully loaded 2024 Lincoln Town Car. The Russian hitmen, themselves fully loaded, lit up the previous owner in front of a strip joint he used for laundering mob money. The good news is they didn't take him out while he was in the car. However, they did stuff his body into the trunk and park it in an abandoned lot. The old boy had been baking in the August sun for a week before the authorities located his body. But now listen, don't y'all worry none. We was able to get most of the stench from his bloated corpse out the upholstery. Yes, sir. Which reminds me, for today only, we're throwing in a carton of coconut-scented air fresheners at no additional cost to you. Now, I'd like to take a quick moment to introduce to y'all our three certified sales folk. Hunch Dixon, Clara Mump, and our newest salesman, Craig Wankemoth. Now then, let's commence today's main attraction. Clara, would you mind telling the midgets, little people, we ready to rock? Yeah!
Clara gave Chucklehead the thumbs up, then left to round up the wee wrestlers.
Lord of Moses,
Craig said to Hunch, his morbidly obese colleague.
I thought it was supposed to be November. It's hotter than a hooker's tail at a hardware convention.
Hunch shrugged.
I just want to get this debacle over with. I got my hot new 21-year-old girlfriend and some jalapeno poppers waiting for me at home. All I can think about is the good time I'm going to have with them delicious poppers.
The crowd spread out, forming a large circle. Soon, the two wrestlers entered, each going to opposite ends.
Craig, you get to ring the bell. Lay on the horn.
Craig beamed.
Yes, sir. Sure thing.
The horn echoed through the balmy afternoon, signaling the beginning of the bout. Thumbtack and Lil Buck moved along the edges of the ring, sizing one another up.
Get him, Thumbtack! Get him!
Yelled a fan of the Mini-Man. Thumbtack roared, beating his chest like an angry gorilla, then charged at Lil Buck. When he closed the gap to 6 feet, he leapt, propelling himself at his opponent's chest. Using a little-known defensive maneuver called getting the heck out of the way, Lil Buck stepped aside, allowing Thumbtack to fly past him and through the window of a 2003 Hyundai Elantra. Thumbtack entered the interior with such force as to disengage the parking brake. Being on a slight incline, the car began rolling downhill at an ever-increasing rate of speed. The people who were in the path of the runaway vehicle used the same maneuver employed by Lil Buck and jumped aside. Several emotionally charged customers clutched at their spouses and screamed in high childlike pitches of blind terror, at least until their wives told them to get it together for the children's sake. Righting himself, Thumbtack attempted to steer the car to a safe spot. However, because the engine was off, the steering wheel was locked. He stomped at the brakes in desperation, but they were too far for his tiny feet to touch. It was then that he knew he was in for an adventure. Cars on the road screeched to a stop, their horns blaring in disharmonious unison, like a trumpet recital at a school for special needs kids. The Fender Bender marching band, made up of crumpled cars, left enough of an opening for Thumbtack to pass through untouched. At this point, the car was moving at a fast clip, gaining more velocity by the second. When it hit the curb of the parking lot ahead, it became airborne, rocketing toward a Winn-Dixie supermarket. In an explosion of storefront glass, the Elantra entered and zipped down a canned goods aisle. A young man with purple hair and a nose ring became trapped. The Elantra scooped him up like a cow catcher on a train, flipping him onto its hood where he hung on for dear life, all the while blaming MAGA for his plight. Within seconds, the car tore through the produce department where it slammed into a banana display, layering the floor with the sweet yellow fruit that goes so well with peanut butter sandwiches and kinky nymphos. As the car spun in endless rapid circles, the wailing wokester lost his grip and flew toward the front checkout lines. Meanwhile, a bored gum-smacking cashier was ringing up an elderly woman's groceries.
May I use this half-off coupon for the tuna?
The older woman asked the cashier. Without warning, the human frisbee landed on the register's conveyor belt, joining a loaf of keto bread, a canister of Metamucil, and a dozen cans of discounted tuna. The two women looked at the unconscious man, then at each other.
I don't suppose I can get half off on him, can I? I'm lonely and could use the company.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
By law, 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Craig surprised Lorna when he walked through the doors hours earlier than he had planned.
Ready or not, I'm home.
I'm back here in the bedroom,
Lorna called out. Craig went to the bedroom and found Lorna scrubbing the wall with a Lysol wipe, a scowl chiseled into her raged, reddened face. He proceeded with caution.
So? What you doing, honey bun?
Don't you honey bun me, Mr. Man. That stupid dog of yours just topped himself.
What'd he do this time? He didn't drag another screaming child into the trailer, did he? Was he eating his poop again? I've already explained to you that he's one of them self-cleaning models.
Lorna turned and stomped towards Craig with her hands on her hips and her eyes glowing with fire.
Oh, I can do you one better. Notice the shine on everything? See the stuff running down the walls? Our fearless protector, one Mr. El Superbo, decided to hike his leg and pee on that running floor fan over there.
Ice water trickled down Craig's spine.
Whoops. Sorry to hear that, sugar. Where is he now?
Probably hiding outside. I pointed my finger at him like a Walther PPK. And told him I was going to take him out back and old Yeller his sorry butt.
I'm just happy that you didn't try to sell him to Trinde Aragua as an emotional support dog again. Did anything good happen today?
Well, something came in the mail that ought to make one of us happy. And by one of us, I mean you. It's another invite to my messed up family's Christmas party.
Cool. I love them parties. There's always plenty of smoking, drinking, and reckless gunfire. Oh, and the celebration of our Savior's birth, I guess. Where are we meeting this year?
According to the invite, it's at my Aunt Pauline's house up in Boone, North Carolina. You can bet it's going to be cold and snowy. We're going to be packed in that tiny rat's nest like homeless people in a subway train. Except it won't smell as nice.
I'm already thinking about the laughs, the music, and the awesome decorations.
Yeah, Craig. Nothing celebrates the time when God drew near better than a 10-foot inflatable Grinch in the front yard. Them things are people's way of saying I have neither the time nor desire to put out a lot of crap this year.
Come on now. Where's your Yuletide spirit? You never get to see your kin any other time of the year. Speaking of which, it might be a great opportunity for you and your mama to patch things up.
Like that's ever going to happen. I heard from Clovis that she's in the hospital.
Lordy. What happened to her?
She came down with a stomach bug. Despite being sick with fever, the old drunk was bound and determined to not let it interfere with her drinking. Well, she decided to try killing two birds with one stone by mixing vodka and Pedialyte. While the liquor was drying her out, the Pedialyte was fighting the hydrator. When the two met in her stomach, it formed a storm front. One of her nurses said it tore her guts up so bad that whenever she pooped, it looked like a mudslide in the Philippines.
That sounds awful. But your sister Clovis is still going to be there, right? I recall she likes to mix things up by bringing a new boyfriend every few years. Poor thing. Every time she finds a new one, the fella ends up dying on her. I recall the first one accidentally cut himself into five pieces with a chainsaw. Number two drowned while he was cutting the grass. And the last one mistook an entire gallon jug of Roundup for a glass of orange juice. It sure does get a fella to thinking about his mortality. Promise me that if something ever happens to me, you'll use part of the insurance money on a classy funeral, with a keg of Dingle Daddies and a bluegrass band.
Lorna rolled her eyes.
Like I'd blow any of that perfectly good insurance money on some kind of crap like that. No, sir, I'm going to roll your naked corpse up in a kerosene-soaked mattress and light you up in the backyard like a flaming pierogi.
I am touched,
Craig said with a tinge of sadness and a lot of fear. He pointed the discussion in its original direction.
Has she told you much about her current beau?
Yep, that'd be Tad. Clovis said that he's artsy, uppity, and not much to look at. But she added that all of his negative qualities are offset by a schlong the size of a didgeridoo.
Well, the most important thing is that they're in love. I know that after all this time, our romance still gives me a deep burning feeling.
So does hemorrhoid ointment,
Lorna pointed out. Lorna struck Craig as more irritable than usual. He wanted to get to the bottom of it, if only to confirm his suspicions.
You seem a mite crankier than usual, hun. I don't think it's all about El Superbo. Are you still upset about losing your teaching gig down at Lil Shit's preschool?
Maybe. I guess. I don't know. I do know that feeling obligated to go to another one of them awful family get-togethers doesn't help.
I understand what you're saying, but you're only talking about one family gathering.
It ain't no family gathering, Craig. It's a Civil War reenactment with banana pudding and green bean casserole. Now go grab a towel and dry the stuff I've already wiped down before the room starts smelling like a men's room at the Waffle House.
Ever the good soldier, Craig retrieved the towel from the bathroom and dabbed the damp walls while Lorna mumbled something about searching Amazon for an emotional support dog vest. Pauline was sitting in her favorite chair. A scalding microwave serving of mac and cheese centered on a TV tray in front of her. For dessert, she had a two-pack of D-Dum Diddly Ding-Dongs at the ready. For an after-dinner satisfaction, a fresh pack of Pall Malls was resting beside an overflowing ashtray on the lamp table next to her. She was in the middle of a riveting episode of her beloved Law & Order Binge-a-thon when the doorbell's ding pierced her peace.
Daggummit! This better not be another Mormon. I'll beat him to death with his bicycle.
Pauline shoved the tray aside, then stomped to the door and wrenched the knob as though she were snapping the neck of an ornery cat. Fueled by annoyance, she flung the door open, almost yanking it off its hinges. A serious-looking man in a dress shirt and khakis stood on her porch.
What do you want?
Pauline demanded to know.
Sorry to bother you, ma'am. Are you Pauline Peck?
I am.
Well, my name's Luther Smith. I'm with the Fire and Ice Heating and Plumbing. Did one of my techs drop by yesterday to repair your furnace?
Pauline didn't like his line of questioning. It felt more like an interrogation. She relied on her encyclopedic knowledge of legal phrases that she had garnered over the years from watching hundreds of reruns of Law & Order.
I object to your line of questioning. Move to strike.
Pauline's response to his simple question confused Luther.
Oh, I'm not sure what you mean by that. My tech Melvin has turned up missing.
Well, if he turned up, he can't be missing now, can he?
Luther sighed and circled back around to his main point, Melvin's disappearance.
According to his work log, you were his last customer. Did he happen to show up here? If so, when did he leave? I'm sorry for all the questions, but I'm trying to retrace his steps. As you can imagine, the company, as well as his family, is worried about him. He has to be missing for 48 hours before the authorities will get involved. I'm hoping to find him before then.
Pauline kept her guard up. Briscoe and Logan were a crafty pair, and so was this stand-in for Jack McCoy.
He came by yesterday morning. He went downstairs and worked on the furnace. He must have finished, cause the heat's back on. I woke up from my nap and went to check to see if he was still here. He wasn't. Sorry SOB left his tools down there and scratched up my basement floor something awful. The perp had means, motive, and opportunity to clean up after himself, but decided to flee the jurisdiction instead. Are y'all gonna pay for my floor to get fixed? Don't make me take this to the grand jury.
We can discuss the damage in a bit, ma'am. But for now, would it be okay if I took a quick look inside your basement?
Pauline knew her rights.
You got a warrant to enter the premises?
A warrant? No, ma'am, I don't have one of those. I just want to see if I can find anything that might help me locate Melvin, that's all.
Pauline considered the request.
I guess that'd be all right. Just be careful not to disturb any evidence before the boys from the lab get here.
Luther realized he was dealing with an elderly shut-in who watched too much television, and whom, by the look of her, scarfed jumbo bags of cheese puffs like they were her last meal before going to the execution chamber.
I'll keep that in mind. Lead the way and I'll follow.
Soon the two arrived at the basement door. Pauline began informing Luther of his right to use the stairs.
I've noticed how TV detectives use flashlights at murder scenes in broad daylight instead of just opening the curtain to let in the light. You can use the pull string halfway down for the overhead bulb. Now then, if you don't need me for nothing else, I'd like to get back to my program.
Please, go ahead, ma'am. I won't be long.
Pauline returned to the living room while Luther navigated the rickety steps. After turning on the single light, Luther entered the basement. The first thing he noticed was Melvin's toolbox near the furnace. He searched the area around it for anything that might provide a clue. He found nothing other than small communities of spiders and roach motels that were so full they were flashing small no-vacancy signs. A strong vibration in the concrete floor startled him. Upstairs, Pauline heard the low rumble rising from the basement.
Oh, give me an acid enema. Does he have to make so much noise?
She grabbed a TV remote and cranked up the volume until it drowned out the racket. Downstairs, Luther steadied himself against the quaking ground while his eyes panned the room for the source of the disturbance.
Oh, dear Lord,
he muttered as a thin crack spread across the floor. He watched wide-eyed as it opened, revealing a bright reddish glow from within. The chasm stopped expanding after it reached a couple of yards in width. The same terror that had adhered Melvin to his spot held fast to Luther as well. Two thick, muscular arms flopped over the edge of the pit, pulling a large, horrific beast out of its scorching depths. The demon's heartless glare burned into Luther's jumbled mind, producing a soul-piercing scream that went unheard over the din of the upstairs television. Pauline had rolled through two episodes of Law and Order, and Luther still hadn't returned from the basement. She turned the TV's volume down.
Hey, mister! You still down there?
When she got no response, she got up and visited the basement. Pauline stood at the bottom of the stairs, breathing hard from anger. Luther had up and left without so much as the courtesy of a goodbye. Even worse, he had scratched the floor even more, and he had left the toolbox behind.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Craig and Lorna left behind the mild weather of South Georgia and made their way toward the chilly air of the Western Carolina mountains. Several hours later, they had passed through the foothills and were now within 50 miles of Boone. Highway 421 was constipated with holiday travelers going up or coming down the mountain. Worse yet, it was starting to snow, further slowing the eternal flow of traffic. From the passenger seat of the truck, Lorna stared angrily at the distant hills as if they had slept with her husband, yelled at the dog, and stolen the silverware. Craig kept his spirits up by humming along with the Christmas tunes being belched from the truck's half-rotted speakers.
Would you please turn that crap off?
Lorna asked.
Radio stations have gone too woke for me. If I have to listen to I Saw Daddy Kissing Santa Claus one more time, I'm gonna puke.
Craig grinned.
I'm kind of partial to the song Santa Baby. What fella doesn't like getting an erection listening to a Christmas record? Another one I like is Christmas Shoes. That one always makes me tear up.
Lorna struggled to recall the tune.
Is that the one where the little poor boy goes to a store to buy shoes for his ailing mama to wear in heaven?
That's the one. The follow-up record ain't quite as good, though. In that one, we learned that his mama's a pole dancer who goes by the stage name Cherry Yum Yum. Seems she's dying from an unnamed STD. Well, the poor little fella comes barreling into Cherry's bedroom, toting them shoes and grinning like Kevin Spacey at a boys' camp. Cherry Yum Yum takes one look at the shoes and frowns. Says the soles are too slick for the stripper stage, and that they's ugly to boot. Well, now the child's heart is so broken that he slinks out of the room like a dog who got caught eating poop out of the cat's litter box. He takes the shoes back to the store to get his money back so he can buy another gift for his mama. Unfortunately, the owner is Jewish, so he don't give refunds or exchanges. The story ends with the child going back to his rundown house and waiting on Cherry Yum Yum to die so him and his daddy can sell off her stripper gear and move to Jacksonville to open him up a roadside bait shop.
Lorna grimaced.
Dang, and I thought my old lady was a witch.
With an angry snort, she returned her hateful gaze to the mountains, her face belying her impatience.
This traffic's got me so ticked off that I could bitch slap a Quaker.
An impatient driver was tailgating Craig's truck, honking his horn in frustration at every stoplight. Lorna had had enough. She climbed out of the truck and retrieved an aluminum baseball bat she kept in the bed for such occasions. The unfortunate driver shook as Lorna stomped through the snow toward him like a maddened Sasquatch.
You honk that horn one more time and I'm gonna play whack-a-mole on the hood of your car. Comprende?
She pointed the tip of the bat at the frozen man for emphasis, then returned to the warmth of the truck. The altercation reset the collective mood, as the occupants of the surrounding vehicles took notice of the incident and shuddered. Craig's truck became like Moses parting the Red Sea, as the frightened motorist pulled to the side of the road, allowing it to pass.
And to all a good night,
Lorna grumbled. In a rough-hewn area of Boone, a procession of drunkards and clunkers wove their way up the winding lane to Pauline's house, fishtailing from ice, snow, and Johnny Walker Red. One by one, relatives, distant and otherwise, staggered their way through the front door of the simple home and into the cramped living room to begin the festivities. Craig and Lorna brought up the rear. Craig was disappointed and embarrassed over their tardiness. As for Lorna, her earlier impatience had mellowed from the happy knowledge that their lateness meant spending less time at the party. Once inside, the intrepid pair fought their way through the haze of whiskey burps and blue tobacco smoke. They paused along their zigzag path, giving compulsory hellos to everyone, including the beleaguered hostess, Pauline. As they conversed, the dulcet tones of R. Kelly's Warm Golden Holiday CD flowed from a battered boombox perched on the living room mantel. On television, Snoop Dogg's Christmas crack party held the interest of other partygoers. After the quick howdy-do with Pauline, Lorna motioned for Craig to follow her.
Let's check out what the potluck's looking like this year. Just make sure to stay away from Abigail's raccoon rigatoni. Talk about a gut bomber.
They made it a few feet into the kitchen before the riptide of relatives pushed them into a narrow hallway that connected the kitchen and bathroom. Chatty, ratty relatives lined the stretch, going on about trucks, prison, and the overlapping subtext of warm humanism that grounded the neo-realist roots of Fellini's visionary films. The noisy chatter, amplified by the forced proximity, exacerbated Lorna's antisocial behavior. The only selling feature for her was the easy pickings when it came to mocking her no-account relatives.
Well now, I see my junkie niece Laura Lee is still hooked on nicotine and heroin. That girl's skinnier than a Bible page. And looky there, if it ain't her gigolo brother Danny with his latest baby mama, or as I like to call him, Pimp Daddy Santy and his ho-ho-hos. And would you get a load of that ugly dress that Agnes has on? Looks like a bedsheet from Motel 6.
Lorna continued her color commentary.
Hey there, listeners. Let's settle in with the oldies as we turn our attention to Becky Lynn, who still thinks that she's a 20-year-old. That old gal's had more work done on her than a Ford Pinto. If they lift her chin any higher, she's going to have a soul patch.
No sooner had Lorna finished her assessment than a young, curvaceous woman in a form-fitting blouse and tight jeans barged past them. It was her other niece, Becky.
Do y'all mind?
Becky asked, shoving them aside. Lorna didn't appreciate the rudeness.
Hey, Becky, could your jeans be any tighter?
Becky stopped and turned to face Lorna, mutual contempt beaming from her heavily painted eyes.
Your sight must be going, old woman. My jeans ain't tight.
You're right as always, Becky. Them jeans fit you just fine. In fact, we're all enjoying your wonderful production of A Very Vulva Christmas.
Well, it's a dang sight better than your production of She's a Lard-Ass, Charlie Brown.
Oh, yeah? Put up your dukes, carnival whore.
Lorna growled.
Let's see you talk your way out of a taxpayer-funded, government-approved bipartisan butt-stomping.
Craig stepped in to prevent further escalation.
Ladies, come on now. Can't y'all work this out?
Lorna briefly considered Craig's plea for peace.
Gee, I don't know, Craig. I'm kind of married to this whole butt-stomping idea.
Craig persisted.
Lorna, hun, this will be a great time for you to show who the bigger person is.
Becky snickered.
With her wide load, I think we all know who the bigger person is.
Craig huffed.
Doggone it, Becky. Why you gotta keep stirring the pot? Christmas is supposed to be a time for joy and goodwill.
Becky was relentless in her sarcasm.
Goodwill must be the place your bitch wife found her ugly outfit. Is that from the Mama June Clown collection?
Lorna fumed.
You might ought to speak up. I couldn't hear you over the squealing of your jeans top button getting ready to shoot off like a cannonball. Hurry up, Craig. Get everybody a helmet and some eye protection.
Becky smushed her lips together in a pitiful pout, making her fat-filled lips look like overinflated monster truck tires.
That's over the top even for you, Lorna. Apologize.
Lorna relished a hurt look on Becky's face.
Need I remind you, RuPaul, that you're the one who started in with the fat jokes? If you're waiting for an apology, you best have a lunchbox, a good book, and a bucket to pee in, because you are in for one long wait, sister.
Becky's pout grew into a sinister scowl.
As they say at your favorite restaurant, Burger King, have it your way.
And they're off,
Craig groaned, preparing for the violence that was about to transpire. Becky threw the first punch. However, because of the narrowness of the hallway, when she cocked her arm back, her elbow went through the cheap wood paneling. She squealed in pain. Lorna bellowed with delight. She didn't fare any better when she threw a punch of her own. There wasn't enough clearance for a full swing, so she accidentally struck Craig on his jaw, rendering him unconscious. With Craig no longer serving as a barrier, Becky stepped forward to deliver a headbutt to Lorna. Lorna, upon seeing the blow coming, ducked at the last second, exposing her elderly Aunt Merple's forehead. There was a loud crack as the two skulls connected, sending Merple backward where she collided with her husband Percy. Percy grunted as the air left his chest. His flailing body staggered backward as Merple's flabby frame pushed him along until they burst through the closed bathroom door in a splintering crash. Once inside the confined space, inertia sent the couple through the shower curtain and into the tub. Lorna's cousin Toodles sat screaming in terror on the commode, her drawers and breeches crumpled around her ankles. The Christmas gifts she had dropped down the toilet's chimney released their smell into the hallway where the innocents were clustered. Amidst the collective gagging, someone spoke up.
Shoo-wee! Last time somebody dropped a load that big and deadly, Hiroshima went up in a mushroom cloud.
Gripping the shower handle, Merple tried to pull herself off of Percy, inadvertently starting the shower. She stood, stumbled, and caught the shower head to steady herself. In doing so, she misdirected it toward Toodles, hitting her in the face with a strong blast of water. Toodles, now in complete panic mode, jumped from the toilet screaming. Covering her face with her hands, she twirled a few times in blind confusion, then rushed out of the crowded bathroom. However, in her dash to safety, the clothing around her ankles became tangled, causing her to lose her footing and sail forward. By then, the water had escaped to the hallway floor, turning it into an indoor slip and slide. Toodle screeched like a boiling tea kettle as she roared down the water-soaked hall on her stomach, her bare butt pointing proudly heavenward. The trajectory of her unstoppable force knocked the feet out from under the people stuck in the hallway, making them look like human bowling pins, Becky included. As for Lorna, she barely had time to yank Craig out of Toodle's path.
Incoming!
One survivor warned the folks gathered in the kitchen. The partiers screamed in terror, each jumping to avoid being mowed down by Toodles the torpedo. Someone had the presence of mind to holler at a woman near the back door to fling it open and get out of the way, which she did. Toodles, still wailing at the top of her lungs, blasted through the open doorway like a laser-guided missile. She landed on a thick trail of ice at the foot of the porch steps, then tobogganed downhill toward some woods. The kitchen dwellers ran to the door and watched helplessly as Toodles sailed between the trees at a bullet's pace, her shrill screams lessening as she flew deeper into the dark void.
"You think we ought to go after her?"
asked a woman.
"No. Why ruin a good story to tell at next year's party?"
After a few chuckles at Toodles' expense, the revelers joined the rest of the party, high on booze and low on compassion. Despite a few light slaps to his face, Lorna still wasn't able to rouse Craig.
"You can't blast through rock with a firecracker,"
she reasoned. Using her full upper body strength, she slapped Craig hard enough to make him flip from his back onto his stomach.
Who'd I owe money to? I feel like Mike Trout hit a homer with my head.
Lorna rolled her eyes.
"Stop turning everything into a Broadway musical. I just gave you a little tap, that's all."
"Is everybody okay?"
"I guess so. Becky had her beach ball butt to break her fall. My cousin Toodles is another story. Last I seen, she was tearing through the 100-acre wood like Winnie the Pooh with a rectal rocket."
"I remember the fight that started this all, Lorna. Guess Santa ain't gonna be too good to you this year."
"Like he ever has. That fat SOB used to bring me enough coal to power a locomotive."
Craig got to his feet and rubbed his aching jaw.
"Lorna, I know you don't care much for your kin, but couldn't you at least make some kind of sacrifice for my sake?"
Lorna scowled.
"Oh, no, you don't. You can blame it on the moonlight. You can blame it on the good times. Heck, you can blame it on the boogie for all I care. But don't you dare try to blame this fiasco on me. You don't know the first thing about sacrifice."
Craig was incredulous.
Are you kidding me? I sat through La La Land for you.
Lorna wanted to take a jackhammer to his coconuts.
Yeah? Well, I asked you to wear your nice green dress shirt tonight, and you didn't.
Woman, you know I'm too sexy for that shirt.
Lorna felt wrung out from the violence and rage. She needed the liquid version of Christmas cheer. Her favorite adult beverage came to mind.
I could sure use a snort of NyQuil right about now to take the edge off.
That'll do it all right,
Craig said, smiling.
Yep, NyQuil is more than a cold remedy. It's a pathway to the gods.
I don't reckon your Aunt Pauline has any of that laying around, but I'm sure we can find you something.
Just then, Becky walked by, overhearing the conversation.
Sorry to tell you, you evil witch, but Aunt Pauline is fresh out of baby's blood.
Lorna leapt to her feet, her anger returning.
You better zip it, you barrel butt bimbo.
Yeah, well, at least I ain't dumb enough to pick a fight with someone who's 20 years younger and a heck of a lot meaner.
I'm a right bit smarter than you are. You ain't got the brains God gave a Trisket.
I'll have you know, I went to college for nearly 2 semesters.
Oh, which sorority did you belong to? Eat a lot of pie?
The two titans were gearing up for another smackdown when a familiar voice called out.
Hey, Lorna. Get over here, gal.
Lorna was happy to see at least one likable face, even if it belonged to her sociopathic sister, Clovis. While Lorna and Craig pushed their way to the living room to talk to Clovis and her new partner, Becky returned to her original plan, finding a private place to get high. Her first choice was to sneak outside via the kitchen door. However, her plan hit a snag when she peeked through the window and saw a gaggle of relatives searching the woods for Toodles. Leaning against the kitchen counter, she taxed her meager brain for alternatives. She was considering her limited range of options when she noticed a door.
That's either a walk-in pantry or a basement door. It don't matter which, I guess. Any old bar flight closing time will do.
Becky was thrilled to see a basement behind the door after she opened it.
Jackpot,
she chirped. She couldn't find a light switch, so she felt her way down the stairs, eventually connecting with the pull chain. She gave it a tug and the room below came into view. Choosing one corner, she went over, pulled a small baggie of joints from her pocket and fired one up. After a few tokes, her tension gave way to a mellow buzz. When she was halfway through her second joint, she could have sworn she felt the floor move under her.
Oh, wait, this is some grand weed.
A hairline crack zigzagged in front of Becky before opening wide. She shielded her face from its bright light and hellish heat. Two powerful hands sprang forth from the gorge and grabbed her by her ankles, yanking her into the subterranean inferno with one mighty tug. Clovis smiled with pride as she introduced Craig and Lorna to her newest love interest.
Y'all, this here's Tad Rodmounter. He's a rider.
Sorry to hear that, Craig said. How long you been unemployed?
Tad was noticeably older than Clovis and seemed to know it. He had pulled his long, stringy gray hair back in a ponytail tight enough to diminish his facial wrinkles. With his all-black attire of a turtleneck sweater, ill-fitting skinny jeans, and biker boots, he looked like a Bolshevik street poet. His disdain for the surrounding peasants was evident on his pale aristocratic face. The age beatnik's arrogance offended Lorna.
You seem a little old to be dating somebody Clovis's age. You got any growed-up kids of your own?
Why, yes, I do. My ex-wife, a Peruvian armpit model, presented me with 3 glorious daughters. Spring Meadow, my oldest, and her 2 sisters, Sweet Rain and Midnight Song. I named them after some of my favorite poems.
Poems, you say? I was thinking you named them after room deodorizers.
Clovis scowled.
Lorna, mind your manners. Tag gave up his Friday night drum circle to be here.
Craig jumped in to keep the peace.
Hey, I got an idea. Why don't you 2 ladies go and do some catching up with the relatives while me and Tad here get acquainted?
Yeah, I guess that would be best.
Clovis agreed.
Come on, sis. Let's see how Uncle Clyde's been doing since he got electrocuted hanging Christmas lights in the rain. I hear it cured his stutter, but his teeth light up when you yank his ear.
Craig waited until the sisters were gone, then cozied up to Tad.
So, you strike me as kind of the artsy type. What all are you into?
Tad rolled his eyes at the Philistine before him.
I am a man of many tastes. My greatest love is poetry. In particular, I enjoy the works of Proust, Frost, and Tennyson.
Ah, I was always partial to Nipsey Russell. He was this funny black comic in the 70s who used to be a regular on the game show circuit.
Boy, howdy, he had some drop-dead funny rhymes and limericks. Did you ever watch him? Let me tell you, he was Texas knee-slapping hilarious.
Tad wanted to leave in the worst way, but he didn't want to appear gauche. There was also the joy of embarrassing Craig, a man clearly devoid of intellect and sophistication.
I also enjoy viewing classic oil paintings. I recently attended the Three High Italian Painters exhibition at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Perhaps you could share with me your thoughts on the great Renaissance artists such as Raphael and Donatello.
Well, I ain't familiar with them, but there's this one time Lorna and me was in New York City. That's this big town up north. And we visited this fancy museum that had a bunch of famous artist stuff hanging in it. Well, sir, we was in a group looking at some paintings by this old boy named Renoir. Real pretty stuff it was. I asked the guide if any of Renoir's pictures was for sale. Well, when he said that some was, I asked him if any of them come with a blue frame so it'd match our curtains. Lorna didn't want me going to any more museums after that. Now, if we's talking music, I keep the radio in my truck tuned to Buzzard 100. They got the best country western and bluegrass around.
Tad refused to be outdone.
As the connoisseur of tasteful music and thoughtful news analysis, I prefer listening to NPR.
NPR, huh? Lorna won't let us listen to that. She says NPR stands for No Penis Required. Say, can I interest you in some holiday libations? I got some dingle daddies chilling in the cooler out on the porch.
Tad showed his disdain with an indifferent sniff.
As intriguing as that sounds, I prefer something with a bit more regal character, such as a 1981 Pensfold Grange. It's pretentious but delicate on the palate.
I don't think I got anything as fancy as that. Say, why don't you try one of my brews, then tell me what you think? I'd love to get your take on it, seeing as how you got a lot of knowledge about such things.
Tad's ego swelled.
I suppose I could give you my perspective on your curious concoction. Lead the way, my good man.
Once they were on the porch, Craig pulled a Dingle Daddy's from the ice, twisted off the lid, and then handed it to Tad to be sampled.
Here goes nothing, Tad said.
He passed the opening of the bottle under his nose a few times, inhaling its aroma, before taking a small sip.
I must admit that although the flavor is pedestrian, I find this bouquet tantalizing. Let's see what other secrets it holds.
Tad took another sip, allowing it to sit on his tongue longer.
In addition to a mild undercurrent of cinnamon, I detect a quick kiss of lemon that's impetuous but not vulgar. Let us see if I can discover a final clue that will reveal the contents of this crude elixir.
Taking a larger sip, Tad swished the beer in his mouth for a few seconds before swallowing, then grimaced.
The overall pleasantness of the other flavors is sullied by a mild, salty aftertaste that I cannot place nor tolerate.
Craig's eyes opened wide.
Oh, shoot! That's the bottle I stored El Superbo's urine sample in. I must have mixed it up with my other Dingle Daddies and turned one of them into the boss down at the appliance warehouse by mistake. Looks like the old boy's gonna fail his urine test for that guard dog position.
Tad leaned over the porch rail and shoved his index finger down his throat in an attempt to rid his sensitive stomach of the noxious brew. Craig, shaken and embarrassed, slipped back into the house to look for Lorna. She would be mortified to learn what had happened to Tad. Ah, who was he kidding? Lorna was gonna love it. In the basement's dimness, the floor cracked open again. A harsh gagging noise emanated from its depths, a nauseating sound similar to a cat attempting to dislodge a stubborn hairball. A limp body shot out of the chasm, landing beside it. In an instant, the pit slammed shut. Becky got to her feet, her legs wobbling as if they were made of jello. Soot and a thick goo covered her from head to toe. She reeked of sulfur and death. Wiping the jelly from her eyes, she looked at the floor where the crack had swallowed her.
What do you mean I taste like skunk weed and cheap liquor? I'll have you hellfire demons know that I'm an object of intense desire when it comes to horny white peckerwoods. Y'all just ain't got no dadgum taste. Screw all y'all.
Once Becky stabilized, she dragged herself up the stairs and into the kitchen where Lorna and others were congregating. With her back to the basement door, Lorna didn't see Becky come in, but she sure did smell her.
Holy moly ravioli! What is that stench? I ain't smelt nothing like that since the time Mama stood too close to the charcoal grill and her colostomy bag melted.
Clovis was more concerned with Lorna's slide against their mother than Becky's troubling condition.
Lorna Jean Peck, I know you and Mama don't get along, but why you gotta make her the butt of your jokes?
Lorna was ready to return fire.
Oh, get real, Clovis. You was always her favorite. When it came to me, she was a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
Talking about Mama.
I can dig it, I guess. Will somebody help me, please?
Becky bellowed. Lorna and the others turned and saw Becky's disgusting appearance and gasped. Lorna addressed the situation.
Dang, and I thought Tom Hardy was the one who always looked like he needs a shower. What the hell happened to you?
Becky spat out some of the demon toe jam before answering.
Hell is what happened to me. Y'all ain't gonna believe this, but there's a portal to the underworld in the basement. I got pulled into it and went to a dark place of eternal torment. For some reason, they horked me up.
They probably don't care for the taste of hairdyne silicone,
Lorna suggested. Becky became hysterical.
I gotta get out of here. Between Lorna, hell, and this cracker convention, I've had enough.
She plowed through the befuddled onlookers and ran out the kitchen door. When she left the bottom step, a patch of ice caused her feet to fly out from under her. Falling on her bottom, she took off in a blinding flash, following the frozen track that had taken Toodles through the woods and into the deep beyond of the foreboding winter landscape.
There goes another!
A bystander remarked to the others. Then, just as they had done before, they all went back to their Jim Beam and Lucky Strikes.
That girl looked terrified. I think I believe her,
Clovis said to Lorna.
After all the freaky stuff I've seen over the last few years, I don't have any reason not to believe her,
Lorna answered.
Do you think Aunt Pauline knows about the basement?
Let's go ask her.
Lorna and Clovis were weaving their way toward the living room when Clovis stopped cold.
What's wrong?
Lorna asked. A chilling grin blossomed on Clovis's face.
I was just thinking, Tad's kind of a stuck-up jerk. He always makes me feel stupid and classless,
she said, scratching her butt crack.
I can't say as I care for him much neither,
Lorna confessed. She could tell by the dead look in Clovis's eyes what she was planning.
I won't tell if you don't.
Clovis feigned shock at Lorna's assumption.
Hey, easy there, girl. Don't go putting words in my mouth.
Clovis, I think we both know you've had worse things in your mouth.
Lorna nodded in the direction of the front door.
Speaking of which...
Tad staggered inside the house, his stomach sore from all of the dry heaving he had done on the porch. His red eyes searched the room for Clovis, waving when he saw her.
Yoo-hoo, my delicate lily!
He yelled for everyone to hear. Snickers ensued. Clovis was humiliated, enraged. As she stood atop the shifting sands of her affection, her intentions became apparent, her desires dark.
Hey there, Tad,
she hollered across the packed room.
I want you to take a gander at some vintage albums by them classical ensembles you said you like. You can tell me which ones are valuable. They're down in the basement. Oh, come to me, my hardy steed.
Giddiness overtook Tad.
I'm on my way, my sweet desert flower. I'm certain I can ascertain their value at a glance. When it comes to classical geniuses, I am a master of music.
Lorna passed Tad on her way to Craig, who was standing in front of the television guffawing at Christmas Vacation.
I can't quite put my finger on it, but I swear that Cousin Eddie reminds me of somebody I know,
he said to the other laughing viewers.
That'd be every man in this room, including you,
Lorna pointed out.
Oh, hey, sweetheart. Did you and Clovis have a good talk? Y'all didn't argue over your mama again, did you?
Yeah, but we worked it out. She told me that Tad has a special Christmas present for her. He just don't know it yet.
Speaking of the happy couple, where'd they get off to?
The corners of Lorna's mouth curled into a malicious grin.
Becky told him about something interesting in the basement.
Craig looked past Lorna to the kitchen.
She must want him to have whatever it is to himself. She's cramming a chair underneath the basement doorknob. I guess there's just something about Christmas that brings out the generosity in folks.
Submersed in the holiday magic, Craig felt warm contentment welling within him, wetting his eyes and bringing forth a smile. He took in the joy and togetherness that only comes around once a year, like spring flowers, taxes, and prostate exams. He looked appreciatively at the horde of family members whose love for one another was so big that he felt there was enough left over for him, even if he wasn't one of their own. It is said that the Craig's heart grew three sizes that night. It is also said that he spent the rest of the holidays in the cardiac care ward from the heart attack he had suffered. However, Christmas came early for him when his doctors introduced him to something more enjoyable than NyQuil, a morphine drip. And as visions of sugar plums danced in his woozy head, Craig managed a crooked grin, turned to everyone, and declared,
On behalf of myself and Lorna, El Superbo, and the entire cadre of crackers from Claxton, y'all have yourselves a merry little Christmas. Now, where's my dang morphine?
When it hit the curb of the parking lot ahead, it became airborne. Lil Buck stepped aside, allowing Thumbtack to fly past him and through the window of a 2003. Allowing Thumbtack to fly past him and through. Allowing Thumbtack to fly past him and through the window of a 2003 Hyundai Elantra.
Fuck.
Thumbtack entered the interior with such force as to disengage the parking brake. In an explosion of storefront glass, the Elantra entered. Oh, PD. PD, PD. You fucking lunatic. A young man with purple hair and a nose ring became trapped. All the while blaming MAGA for his... Within seconds he... I can't do this. I'm done. I give up for today. Fuck it. I'll come back tomorrow. And fuck you too, PD. As the car spun in endless rapid circles, the wailing Wokester lost his grip and flew toward the front checkout.
Why'd he do this time? He didn't drag another screaming child into the trailer, did he?
Our fearless protector, one Mr. El Superbo, decided to hike his leg and pee on that running floor fan over there.
Poor thing. Every time she finds a new one, the fella ends up dying on her. I recall the first one accidentally cut himself in five pieces with a chainsaw.
Luther realized he was dealing with an elderly shut-in who watched too much television, and whom, by the look of her, scarfed jumbo bags of cheese puffs like they were the last meal.
That's the one. The follow-up record ain't quite as good, though. In that one, we learned that his mama's a pole dancer who goes by the stage name Sharon.
Craig's truck became like Moses parting the Red Sea as the frightened motorist pulled to the side of the road, allowing it to pass. The Christmas gifts she had dropped down the toilet's chimney released their smell into the hallway where the innocents were. She landed on a thick trail of ice at the foot of the porch steps, then tobogganed downward toward... Ted wanted to leave in the worst way, but he didn't want to appear gauche. The fuck is that? Gauche? Didn't want to appear gauche. God damn it, PD. This shit up. Pronunciation. G-A-U-C-H-E.
Let us see if I can discover a final clue that will reveal the contents of this crude elixir.
Oh my God. I don't like talking like this.
Talking like this makes me feel so funny. Oh my God. Another crude elixir. Crude elixir.
And that was Craig's Christmas by the busty and vivacious P.D. Williams. A family get-together is going to be hell any way you look at it, right? A little about the author. P.D. Williams is an author, musician, and friend to woodland creatures everywhere. When he isn't dressing up in a bear costume and chasing terrified children around public playgrounds, he's writing music, horror, comedy, and crappy bios like this one. A couple of new books on the way. The first is Quick Hide the Body, which is already available on Amazon with an audiobook on the way. It features performances by the Three Amigos, Jeff Sturtevant, Paul J. McSorley, and yours truly. Shards of Bone, his next collection of short horror fiction, is scheduled for release in late winter of 2026. Petey would appreciate it if you buy any and all of his titles by late January before the MasterCard bill with Christmas expenditures comes due. He thanks you all in advance for your patronage. Hey, appreciate it, PD. Always a pleasure, my friend.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I guess this is where we part ways, at least till next time. So grab a drink for the road, friend, and may the wind be at your back. May the road rise up to meet you. I don't know what we're doing next week, but maybe we can find a story about a boy who missed Christmas or something. I think I could really embody that kind of character, you know? Ah, fuck it. See you on the 26th, y'all. And until then, a Merry Christmas to all. And to all, go fuck yourselves.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.